Welcome to ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. Opinions expressed during the show do not reflect the views of ACB Radio or the American Council of the Blind, its members, employees, or board of directors. If you would like to participate in the live show at 2 hours Universal on Wednesdays, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
You got to love technology sometimes, and this is the second week in a row now where Skype has reared its ugly head here for us on Main Menu Live. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the show. Let me bring in my co-host, Daryl. Hello, Daryl, how are you?
Good evening, doing well, and getting ready for 2 hours of live programming this evening.
That's right, and then next week we're going to have only 1 hour of Main Menu next week. And Kelly Saperja will be here to talk to us all about a game. And then we will be gone for the holiday season, and we'll return in January. So the first, it actually will be the second week, because I think that the first, correct me if I'm wrong here, Daryl, but I think that the first falls on a Tuesday.
So yes, it does. So we'll have. So I don't know if it'll be the second week, because we're not going to have a New Year's Day.
No, exactly. So we'll be back.
Folks.
We'll be back on the 8th, or so, and so we'll have just 1 hour of Main Menu next week, and that will repeat for both hours, and then I believe Byron will be in, and then the rotation will just continue from there. So. Well, tonight we bring back Darcy and Holly because we had a really overwhelming response to our first Mac review, and we thought we would start bringing them back and let them talk about all kinds of different things. And then in the second hour, we're going to be talking technology, we're going to be talking about toys, and most importantly, shopping sites on the Internet. And we're even going to try and get Mrs. Claus or Mrs. Chandro to join us during that second hour. And talk about some of her favorite shopping sites, because we know that she definitely knows more about those things than we do, except of course for technology toys, and then we're the king on that. So there you go. Let's see. Tonight you can reach us by calling into 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF. And Daryl, you want to give them the rest of the other details?
I have. MSN Windows Live Messenger. You can add Main Menu at acbradio.org to your contact list and chat with us that way. You can send email to mainmenu at acbradio.org. You can keep track of any show notes that we make available on our Twitter page. That's twitter.com/mainmenu. Twitter, twitter.com/mainmenu.
All right, very good. All right, well, let's warmly welcome Darcy and Holly back to Main Menu Live this week. Hi, guys. How's it going?
Hey, Jeff. Hey, Daryl.
Hi.
Are you all ready for Christmas?
I am.
Yes, mostly.
Really? Good. So we should, you know, we could ask each of you what you're getting each other for Christmas, but then, of course, then you both would know what you're getting. So
yeah.
That won't work.
That won't be any fun.
Yeah, that won't work. But I'm sure it will be
quite a
bit of a surprise. And are you guys going to be getting together over the holidays?
Yes, we are.
Oh, good.
Yep.
Good. That's
after Christmas.
After Christmas.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Good.
Yep.
All right. Well, I hope. How's the weather? How's the weather in both places there?
Well, here it's a little bit cold. I live in Ontario, Canada. We're getting some. I don't think it's snowing yet, but we are getting some. We had some rain earlier today, and it was pretty chilly. So
here it's about 75 degrees.
75. So wow.
Yeah, we've had the windows open all day, and it just doesn't feel like December.
That's Pennsylvania, right?
Tennessee.
Oh, that's Tennessee. Okay.
Well, it's 44 degrees here in wet, very, very damp Tucson, Arizona, which is quite abnormal for us. It's rained now for 3 days, and I think the high today was 48. So, yeah, quite quite yucky out there. Definitely, yeah. Definitely muddy. So, all right. Well, now the last time we had you guys on, we kind of just did a real sort of, you know, basically a leopard overview. And I thought we would just kind of visit the whole realm of Mac, and we're going to kind of let you guys also kind of lead the direction of this too, and because obviously you both of you being more Mac experts than we. Although I must tell you that every time I talk with Mac people, it makes me think more and more about buying one. In fact, I saw Shelley on Twitter today, and she said, "I got another person to buy a Mac. Really, I'm not trying to convert everybody." So it was rather kind of funny, but
we'll have you converted yet.
I don't know. You should have talked to me on Thanksgiving. You really probably could have helped me get there. You heard about that, right?
No,
I had Jeff had a computer meltdown.
I had I lost everything. I lost motherboard, video, yeah, the whole shooting match. And for what I spent,
I'll see right there, your chance to just do a clean break and just.
I could have done that. You're right. Unfortunately, I had commitments, and I wouldn't have had to do it on the Mac. So that was my big dilemma. But I think I spent it.
Boot camp or something.
Well, yeah, but I'm not sure how I'd get three sound cards on the Mac to work together. But so yeah, I think, and I spent about enough that I probably could have bought a Mac. I spent about $700, and I think I could have probably bought a Mac, probably without a monitor. But
yeah, I could have got the Mac Mini.
Yeah, there you go.
that's probably not the way you want to do the switch when you have to. You know, that's maybe something you want to ease into.
Exactly.
So now you guys still have the Macs that you bought a couple years ago, right?
Yeah, about a year and a half.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So,
June of 2006.
So if someone were really interested in buying, you know, if they were really wanting to get into this and do it right, mm-hmm. obviously you wouldn't want to mm-hmm. just, you know, throw money away at, you know, I mean, it's always better to make sure you get something that's worth it. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think now that you have what you have, would you be happy with what you have, or would you say, you know, for someone starting with a Mac, what would you suggest that they purchase?
When I first heard about VoiceOver, I wanted to get a Mac, and at the time I was thinking about getting a Mac Mini. I figured, you know, I could use the keyboard and everything that I already have. But now that I decided to get a MacBook, I'm actually glad I have, you know, the MacBook, obviously, because, you know, since a laptop, you can take it anywhere. It's a little bit more portable. I'm quite happy with the MacBook. I know there are people on the you know, the various lists who have Mac Minis or iMacs or MacBook Pros or pretty much all the different lines, and they all seem to be happy with them. So
so let's take a step back though, and let's talk about, because some people may not know what the MacBook is versus the iMac versus the Mac Mini. So
okay. Well,
why don't we start by talking about, you know, the hardware lineup, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. Well, probably the lowest end is the Mac Mini. And basically what that is, it's kind of meant for if you're just getting into a Mac, you know, you've already got a keyboard and a monitor and a mouse. You'd not believe how small this thing is. It's this little box, and it's maybe, what, 5 inches? 5 inches square, something like that? Little tiny box, and that's your computer. That's, you know, what would replace your tower. And it's got, you know, the slot on the front for the DVDs and all your ports in the back, and I've not owned one, but it, you know, by all accounts, it's a good little machine.
It's not 5 inches square. It was 5 inches square, and then it's like about an inch high.
Yeah, about an inch high.
Wow.
And then moving up, you have it's tiny. It's tiny. I don't quote me on this, but I think the only drawback with that is it's really hard to do upgrades on, as you might imagine, because it's so small. Like, I don't know that you can do that yourself.
You can't do it yourself.
But if you took it to an Apple store, and let's say you wanted to add more memory to it or something, could they do it?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And, okay, so then moving up, we have the iMac. And the iMac is actually a really neat-looking machine. All it is It's basically the monitor. Like, it's a flat screen monitor, and the computer is basically in the monitor. And on the side of the monitor is your you know, slot loading DVD drive and all that. So it's just a monitor, and then obviously the keyboard and the mouse. And
it's
then
a little thicker than a regular flat screen, but
yeah, it's thicker than a flat screen monitor, but everything is inside the monitor.
Yeah, I've seen those like at Costco and places like that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. When I first saw one, I was like, I want one of these. I don't need one, but I want one just because it looks cool.
Yeah, kind of I want thing. One too. Just
but and then obviously moving up from that in the desktop line, you have the Mac Pro, which is a really high end work machine, and it's probably overkill for most people. Like, I think people who have a Mac Pro are the kind of people who do, like, you know, digital video and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's but the
it's a tower. It's a regular size, like a normal tower, yeah. Looking.
Does it have the monitor in it too?
No, the monitor's separate on that one.
Okay.
It's like a tower.
It really is like a traditional PC then in that
yeah.
respect.
Yeah. By all accounts, I've not had a chance to look inside, but by all accounts, they're really easy to work in. Like, it's all, like, everything's all hinged, and it's just everything kind of swings out, and it's really, really easy to, you know, replace drives and just work on. So,
but isn't there a myth that Apple really doesn't want you doing that? I mean,
I think for the Mac Pros, they're okay with it, because it's meant to be sort of an upgrade machine and, like, a power user machine, and so, you know, it has places for 4 hard drives and up to 16 gigabytes of RAM, and so I think they sort of mean for you to, you know, expand it and upgrade it.
Yeah.
So if you want to add
cards, add more cards and stuff.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that. What are those cards based? What kind of slots are those? Are they? I guess you're just Mac slots.
Well, I want to say they're PCI slots, but
yeah. I don't know that.
You
for
know,
sure.
Don't quote me on that. I'd love to say that's one thing I don't know. I'll have to see next time I'm at an Apple store if they actually let you look inside. They may not, but I'd love to be able to, because I've heard really good things about that.
You couldn't go to CompUSA, but which, by the way, they're closing, but you couldn't go to, you know, like Fry's Electronics and buy a Sound Blaster, PCI card and put it in a Mac.
I don't know. I don't know if you can or you can't. The Mac Pro is actually something I've know the least about, because I don't really know anyone who has one, so I've not really been able to ask anyone any questions.
Uh-huh.
But then moving, so that's all the desktops, and then in the notebook line they have the MacBook and the MacBook Pro. The MacBook is a little bit smaller, and
it's 13 inches.
It's a 13-inch one, and like the monitor is, and then the MacBook Pro, what is it like? Isn't it 15 and 17-inch ones. So the MacBook's a little bit smaller.
The MacBook Pro has a few more, like, card slot. Like, I think it has a PCI card slot. And
yeah, and I think it has a couple. Like, the MacBook has one FireWire port, and the MacBook Pro, I think, has a couple of them. And, the keyboards are a little different. If you were going to look into a Mac notebook, you'd probably want to, you know, go into an Apple store if you could and just play around with both of them and see which one preferred. I'm quite happy with the MacBook myself.
Well, I think you'd want to do
MacBook
that.
The MacBook Pro is quite a bit more expensive too, yeah.
I think you'd want to do that with any of these, though. I mean,
sure.
Yeah.
And I make a point of this every time is that, you know, you can walk into an Apple store and you can play with all of them because VoiceOver is right there for you. So.
Yeah, exactly. That's the nice thing.
You should ask the salespeople, because they're really knowledgeable about the different machines and kind of, you know, see what they see,
yeah.
too.
So those are the different hardware lines. And so that's basically they're kind of designed to fit every budget or every, you know, depending on what you want to do with the thing.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, one thing I will say is that I don't know how this compares with current laptops. I know my old laptop, it was harder to do this, but it's with the MacBook, it's actually quite easy to replace both the RAM and the hard drive. Like, you could do it yourself.
Oh, no, that's interesting.
Yeah, the RAM is actually, there's these little levers, and you flip the levers, and the RAM just kind of pops out, and the hard drive just slides out of the, there's this little spot, the hard drive just slides right out of, so.
Yeah, my Dell's like that as far as the hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's something if you need to upgrade your RAM or your hard drive. I assume you can with the MacBook Pro as well, but I don't know.
I don't think you can with a MacBook Pro.
Oh yeah?
I don't think so. I think that was new with the MacBooks when the MacBooks came out.
Yeah, strangely, the MacBook actually came out after the MacBook Pro.
Oh, wow.
That's what we were waiting on. The MacBook Pro and the iMacs were the first Intel machines to came when they switched to Intel. And then we were kind of waiting on the MacBook because just by all accounts, it sounded like it was going to be what we needed. And that's pretty much when we got our Macs is when the about a month after the MacBooks started shipping.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so how's Leopard been treating you guys now that, you mean, it's been about a month now since we spoke with you, and...
It's nice. There's a lot of new features that we like. One of the things that is, I think we talked about this a little bit last time, is kind of neat, is the screen sharing feature, because what happened is actually after last month's show, we had some people contact us who had, you know, heard us on the show, and they were having some trouble with their, you know, they just bought Macs, like just at, like maybe a week before, and there was a lot they were still learning, and through iChat and the screen sharing feature, we were actually able to, you know, go in there and help them out. You know, they had a few settings that weren't right, and we were able to fix it, and, you know, show them how to work the address book and stuff like that, and it was really cool to be able to do that.
You were able to access their machines, using VoiceOver.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Using their VoiceOver.
Yeah, right. that's how it works. Like you control it, and when you start a screen sharing session, it also starts a voice chat session. So basically, you're hearing so they can't wear headphones, right? So you're hearing their VoiceOver.
Oh, gotcha. Oh, okay. Oh, they have to turn up their speakers then.
Yeah, but actually,
the microphone is so sensitive. The internal, at least for the MacBooks and the MacBook,
for the MacBooks
Pro,
and the MacBook Pros, they're so sensitive that you don't really have to. And surprisingly, you would think, you know, there'd be a bit of a lag, you know, when you put in a command and you get a response. But I mean, there's a tiny bit of a lag, but it's still very usable. Like you could use a computer like that.
Well, that's not too bad. Wow.
Yeah,
So it's not like the Windows screen readers where they send the commands to the local synthesizer to make it speak the output.
No.
Okay.
No, it's
not quite seamless then.
Well, it is.
No, but, well, one thing that's cool, though, is, I mean, if you could work on anyone's computer blind or sighted, because they all, like, all, you'd have to have them turn their VoiceOver on, but you could work on anybody's computer, and that's you know, that's kind of a plus. But yeah, it's maybe not quite as
Well, and it's right. free. And it's,
if
and
you
it's
have
free.
Headphones on, like you really don't have a lot of feedback too. Like if you can wear headphones, the other person can't.
Yeah, so it works really well. Like I said, we were able to get in there and show them stuff and you know, work with things and
change settings.
It's really cool, and that's actually how I like I know there's a few people I'm going to be working with over the next little while.
Tom and Renee are writing us saying, "Oh, it's our computer they worked on, and they did a good job."
Yeah.
Yeah. They should call in. We can talk about that. 866-400-5333 866-400-Jeff. Now, so when you were chatting with them, could you chat via voice then, or were you using text chat while you were doing that, or how did that work?
Okay, you know what was really strange? We were talking on Skype before we set it up, right?
Okay.
And then we decided to, I think Holly decided to share the screen. And I thought, okay, surely she's going to drop off Skype because it's going to, you know, iChat's going to grab control of the voice. But she was actually able to be on both the voice chat in iChat and the thing in Skype at the same time. And it worked, like just without any sort of weird hiccups or anything. And yeah, we were all talking on voice chat. She was in, you know, had control of Renee's MacBook, and you know, between all of us, we were talking about stuff and going through all the settings, and it worked quite well.
It was amazing,
interesting.
I was pretty impressed. Like it was, and like you say, it's, you know, it's a free solution, and it's a great way to especially new users. You know, if you can get them on iChat, you can, you know, go on with them and just kind of show them how to do some things. Because, you know, I would have control of their computer, but they would still have control of it, obviously. So, you know, I could between the two of us, we could, you know, be doing things. And
okay. Okay, so here's the, you know, the, well, not million-dollar question, but maybe the, you know, $20,000 or $30,000 question, perhaps. If somebody wants to be a support rep for a company that supports Macintosh computers, would this be a workable situation?
Oh, yeah. I said, they wouldn't just have to be supporting blind people. They could be supporting anyone, because any Mac's got VoiceOver on it, as long as it has now, I don't know. This is a new feature in Tigers, or in Leopard, I mean. So it wouldn't work in Tiger, but as long as anybody was running Leopard,
the screen sharing wasn't an option
in
Tiger, so.
No, that's what I mean. The whole screen sharing thing is new, but you could very easily do that.
Very interesting. We have Tom in the gang on here. Let's see. Hey, Tom.
Hi, Jeff. How you doing? And hi, Darcy, and hi, Holly.
Hey.
Hi.
So,
and hello, everyone else.
Yeah. So, when did you buy your Mac, Tom?
We bought it 2 days after Leopard got released. It was the 27th of October, 28th of October, I think it was, and we bought ours.
Now, were you on the PC before that, Tom?
Yes. Oh, my guess. Yes, and the learning curve is interesting. I will say that, but it's gradually working its way in. I've still got stuff to learn, but...
Let's talk about that, Tom. Let's talk a little bit about that. What did you find challenging coming from a Windows environment, you know, to learn the Mac?
Well, you know, the first thing you think about, you don't think about it until you have to think about it, but you know how you can click the left mouse button with the JAWS cursor or Window Eyes cursor?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there is none of that with actually the Mac in the same sense that you would normally think about it. But to click something, you would actually hit two keys, which would analogously put the, like, Windows and, let's say, the Control key, and hit the space bar at the same time. That's the way you click something.
Huh.
That's wild. But, I mean, it's that kind of thing that I'm talking about when I say learning curve. These are things that you normally suspect that you might do with a PC, with a Mac, are a little bit surprising. I mean, just copying files and moving them and actually installing programs. The whole process is a little bit different. Things are done sort of the same way, but different keystrokes.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. I mean, let's talk about some of the minor differences there, they could be major too.
There's a major one in that when you do download something, you might end up with the application file, or you might end up with what they refer to as a disk image, where they call it a DMG file in MacDom. And when you go to install it, actually when you run it, you can actually run the program from within the disk image, and it's really, I'll let them talk more specifically about that, but those are things that you can actually run it and not know that it's not in the folder that you expect to have it run in the what they call applications folder on the Mac drive. But,
that's actually, just to talk about that a little bit, What you have in most times when you download a program, like say you download the Mac version of Skype, right? What you have is it's called an application file, and basically it's kind of a amalgamation of any, you know, files that Skype might use. And how you install that is you just move it to your applications folder. If you want to, and then if you decide you don't want the program anymore, you just have to delete it. There's no like, you know, add remove thing. So that's kind of what he's talking about. And they usually do come in a disk image file. And what you can actually do is you can run it within the disk image, so you can see if it's a program you want before you actually, you know, put it into your applications folder.
Gosh, that's pretty interesting.
And I will also, sorry, Daryl, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but what I also will say that it is quite amazing when you start actually working with inside applications doing stuff, you're actually doing the real same things a sighted person would do in terms of walking around the screen, finding what it is that you want, and then actually clicking it and doing the things that a sighted person would do. They try to do a very good job at this, equate the experience of a blind person and a sighted person down to the fact that they can actually show a sighted person the things that a blind person is actually going through to do the things they're doing so that a sighted person can follow it.
Oh, no, that's interesting.
And it really, is particularly good is that you are where they see you. And it's not like where you get stuck. At least I don't think this is true. Holly and Darcy, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this. but you don't run into the same kind of problem that oftentimes you're seeing something on a screen, but you're hearing something totally different. The sighted person has no idea where you are.
Yeah, like there's no like virtual cursor like there is in JAWS or browse
right.
mode. You know, when you're browsing a page, you are where, like, you are with VoiceOver where you are on the screen.
Right.
So its browser has its own cursor then?
Yes, sort of.
Yeah, well, basically, it's like when you move around, you're focused on, you know, whatever element what VoiceOver is on. So, yeah. It doesn't really have its own cursor, per se, but you, like, when you move
you
through a page...
You actually function as if it does.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Exactly. When you move
through
a page...
Well, it uses the VoiceOver cursor.
Yeah.
Like, you use the VoiceOver cursor to move through the page.
Yeah, you can actually... and you can either have them joint, or you can actually have one parked in one place and divorce it from the rest of the world and then move around with the VoiceOver cursor, too, if you want to, such as you would do with a JAWS cursor and stuff like that, or a Window Eyes cursor.
Yeah,
sure,
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or mouse cursor.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So what about Tom, you mentioned copying files.
Well... when you go to copy a file, you do it very similarly, remember that in Mac world, you have different nomenclature for the various keys. The Alt key, they don't have exactly, but they call it either a Command key or an Apple key.
Right.
And then you would also have your Option key, which would be where your Windows key would be on your left side of your spacebar. And the Control key is in the next position. And then off to the left on a portable computer, you have the what they call FN key, and it's kind of reversed in some laptops that you would think of. You know what I mean, Jeff? Where you in laptops?
You
would see the Control key and then the FN key, but it's reversed in Apple. And there's other things that happen too. When you actually copy a file, you would use, let's say, what people would think of as an Alt C to copy it, and then Alt V to paste it. But it's really called Command C and Command V.
Okay, so
one of the things that that we always tell people when they're switching is, and it's hard to do this, but we always tell them to sort of forget what you know about Windows
exactly.
because you're learning a completely new thing. And so after a while, you start to think, you don't think of it well. This is, you know, I do a Control-C in Windows, I do an Alt-C in Mac or a Command-C. You think, well, it's a Command-C. You don't really even think about it. And then
exactly.
it's funny because when I try and go back to Windows speak, I'm like, yeah, you got to do a Command-C. Wait. Control C to copy.
It is an extremely comical situation because when you forget where you are, you walk up to a particular computer, and you start doing the Apple the VL keys with the hey wait this is not working.
Yeah, that doesn't work the way you want it to on a PC. But yeah, that's just to add to what Holly said. You know, if you go into it expecting VoiceOver to be JAWS. You're not going to have that much luck. You're going to be constantly frustrated. And I'm not saying it's not to say VoiceOver is better or that VoiceOver is worse. It's just VoiceOver is different.
Oh, correct.
And you gotta forget what you know.
That's true though. Whether you're using JAWS or Window Eyes, I mean it's really the same thing. But
if you switch from JAWS to Window Eyes, you're still looking at Windows. I mean Windows is still the same. So all your you can still hit the Windows key to bring up the start menu.
True,
you can still do all that stuff.
True.
So but you're not only learning a new screen reader, but you're learning a new way of doing things. And I think I've seen people on the lists get frustrated and I really think that's why is that you've got to spend some before you can really do anything practical, you've got to put some serious time in and get the fundamentals
you
down
must
before
play.
You can, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Darcy and Holly, who have been extremely valuable folks, and I have told Darcy and Holly this too, is when I get better at it, I intend to pass along in the same way they have done to me what I will do to these people, but. And there was some place I intended to go with that, which has slipped my mind at the point. But I'm going to let you guys continue, and as I think of it, I'll bring it back. But
well, why did you decide to get a Mac, Tom?
Oh, well, we had heard that Macs were quite good, and we wanted to see, because we knew Leopard was coming, okay? And we saw the things on the list that said things like Macs aren't really accessible and stuff like that. But the more we investigated that, the less true that turned out to be. And, I know where I was going to go now. I will tell you, and Darcy and Holly can tell you, that we really were frustrated at first. But having gone through what I've gone through, I will say simply that I do not regret in any way, size, shape, or description, nor does Renee, having gotten the Macs. And we are just delighted.
What did you go with? Did you go with the MacBooks, or what did you go with?
We got the MacBook Pros.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I'm going to put Renee on because I want to give her a chance to say hi to you folks, too, and give you a chance to get words from her, too. Hold
okay,
on just
good.
One second.
What impressed me about the Apple Store is when we went in there, I spent $100 for a year's worth of training, 1 hour per week, before I even had the computer. So they used their computers to help me get started on the voiceover. And I still have a one-on-one training with that. And so we go once a week for an hour. And then when Darcy and Holly worked on the computer, got my voice settings set, what I did was I unclicked one of the settings that they had checked. It's one of the mouse settings so that the cursor doesn't jump around because I have low vision. Sometimes I want to work a little bit visually with the Apple, so I'm able to move the cursor into the spot, but now by unchecking where it's voiceover follows the mouse cursor, so that the mouse cursor it'll follow where I'm pointing, it will read to me, so I'm able to be a little bit visual on it, which for some low partially sighted persons, if they want to work in the art program or something like that, we still need speech, but we're able to see something. So I wanted to let Holly know that I tried that, and so far it seems like it's bouncing a little bit less.
So, Renee, you said it cost you $100 for the training?
Yeah, it's $100, and you get 1 hour of training for a year. And I didn't ask them. I'm not clear. I think that they will renew it at the end of the year. But every week you get an hour of personal one-on-one training.
Where can you buy?
Good deal, really.
I was just going to say, where can you buy 100 hours of? Well, it's 1 hour a week, right? So it's really, what, 52 hours a year?
52 hours.
And I have to say that there are times when, if it's slow, they have spent more than an hour.
So,
last
so it's $2 an hour. Where can you buy consulting?
Yeah, last week, we had one other person there. So, in other words, Tom got a full hour, and I got a full hour instead of... The other person was this one gentleman. He was the trainer for both of us. So sometimes it would lean into one of our hours, and that, so we would get the hours back to back. So Tom and I would go together, and we got a few more people. I mean, they're trying to learn the voiceover. I am having a little problem remembering the commands, and sometimes I accidentally edit my mailboxes when I don't want to because it'll say edit mode, and I'm not getting it right to respond. So there is still a learning curve there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's very interesting. So now, when you bought the Mac, did they help you get it, you know, set up and stuff within the store then, or how did that work?
Yes, they did. When we got the Mac, what happened was they were supposed to have Leopard installed on it. We waited a week because we didn't know how to get it set up. We brought it back in, and they found out that my computer, well, the computer I was going to use, they didn't have Leopard on it. Tom's had Leopard on it, but the one that I was going to use didn't. And they straightened that out. They put the Leopard on there, and they also put my software on there. They told me that if you bring in your PC tower, anything that's on your PC, if there's programs that will work, that will be fine. They did install the Fusion for us, so that's on there. But they don't install Windows. That they won't do. So if you want to install Windows, and we have to do that on our own. So we told Darcy and Holly that if they wanted to try it on our computers, so that they could learn how to do it, we would more than welcome, because I'd like to get get out from under my computer. There are some things that I need Windows for, but I'm trying to switch.
For people who don't know, Fusion is the VMware thing where you can run Windows from with inside OS X.
And it's running at the same time, which is amazing.
Apparently, one of the things I just recently found out that really impressed me, I haven't tried this myself, but apparently when you create your virtual machine, you can have it do an unintended Windows installation. You give it your serial number, and it will automatically install Windows and set up.
I think Gordon demonstrated that.
Yeah, he did.
Earlier this year, or even last year. It's on a main menu archive.
It was this year.
Go back and hear that one, because I think I ever...
It's great.
But I'm not up to trying that myself, but... Welcome.
Renee, it was. I was shocked how easy it was. It was ridiculously easy.
Because I have the Windows CD, but
well, there you go. You can do it then.
But I'm not sure what to do when you put it in the Mac, and I'm not that familiar
I was just shocked how easy it was.
I'm sure it's really easy, and you can like. That's just really cool, because you can switch into Windows because there are certain things that you're going to want Windows for, and just like I know for me personally, I have a Windows PC, and there are things I want Windows for, so I turn it on for that. But I may consider getting the VMware Fusion, because it would just be easier to have it rather than turn on this old. No, it's not free.
We bought it there. They had the Fusion there, and they did install it. I don't know what some of the programs are for, and I really wouldn't know how to install the Windows. I've got too much to learn with the others.
Now, Boot Camp, which does come with Leopard, that is free, and that's the Apple's method of having it, where you basically dual boot. Like, you can choose between Windows and Linux,
right,
so you can go that route, and it'll be free.
My understanding, when you do have Windows, that Zoomtex will work on it, and that has speech on it. I don't know about JAWS or WindowEyes, just in
WindowEyes works, and WindowEyes works, and there may be some keyboard issues with JAWS. That's what
okay.
I've had.
I don't think JAWS works in the visual or the virtual machines.
I want everybody to know that the Mac, when you plug in a Braille display, any Braille display, you don't have to go through and pick out your drivers, which Braille display you're using. You just plug it in, and it says, "Oh, okay, you want to use Braille? That's here it is," and so it will support the PacMate. Tom is using his Focus 40. It will support a number of other Braille displays. Apparently, it doesn't care which Braille display you have. You just plug it in, and it automatically will know which one, which driver, which would whatever. You just have Braille. It's just instantaneously. So I think people are going to want to know that. So that's why I threw that in.
Apparently, I think I might have mentioned this last time, that you can, since Tiger, you've always been able to install the operating system with speech, but apparently you can install with Braille as well. You can install the operating system with Braille. So that's another option if you're a Braille user. So I don't have a Braille display, so I haven't been able to play with that, but...
I'm just throwing it out there, because some people are wondering, well, what about my Braille display? It doesn't care which Braille display you have.
As long as it's on the list, it'll work.
But it seems like we went down and we looked in the list. I mean, it's like every Braille display I ever heard of is on the list.
Yeah, a lot of the modern ones are. Yeah, the Braille Note won't do it, but I don't know a lot about Braille displays, but I think all the USB ones, like all the, big name USB Braille displays will work. If you've got an old one that uses a serial port or something that...
Hey, will my old Versa Braille 2 work?
No.
I don't think they support the Versa Braille yet. Maybe
my old Versa
version.
Braille 2 from 1987. plugged
well,
into
I'm sure that there's staff that's not on there. Maybe they can. I don't know. Maybe it can be added.
No,
I
was,
put it like that.
I was being silly.
do you actually have one of those still, Jeff? And does it still work?
Yes, I do, and no, it doesn't.
Well, it wouldn't work anyway, then.
Well, that's true, yeah. But, well, it would be great if it did, if I plugged it into a Mac. But you'd win me over if it did that.
Fix your Braille display.
Exactly.
It's not quite that good.
Little Mac clone.
Well, but that's another thing to, that's another thing to talk about. A lot of people talk about, feel that the Mac platform tends to be quite a bit more stable, but we also have to talk about that. You know, they don't really focus as much on backward compatibility, and the hardware that you can use has to be, as I understand it, approved, kind of like Windows logo, but with no choice. Is that pretty accurate as far as hardware?
Well, I can tell you that anytime I've tried to use the hardware, it's worked. Like any I haven't used a lot. Like things like my USB headset and whatnot have worked just fine, and most external drives and whatnot. I think you're right in the sense that Apple tends to be the first to get rid of things. Like they were one of the first companies to get rid of things like, back in the late 90s, they got rid of the 3.5-inch disk drive when most people still had them. And,
I think the
fact
that Apple has done what no other computer company is doing, and that is saying, hey, world, whether you're blind or visually impaired, every computer is going to start up letting people know that there is accessible features. And if you want them, they're here. If you don't want them, you can escape or whatever the command is. Just know that if you want to bring them back, You can. And when somebody cited who's never even heard of accessible features or heard of this kind of thing, when they open up a Mac for the very, very first time in Leopard, and they get a new Mac, they're going to get that message up front. And that says something to me that Apple is thinking of the fact that, yes, there's the population, not just those who are blind, but some sighted people just might want to have something read to them, and they can turn it on and they can turn it off at will. And I think that and there's a lot of seniors that are getting interested in computers, and I just that concept is exciting to me as a consumer, because they're trying to make it, hey, look, why should this screen reader cost thousands of dollars? It's right here in the box. Here's the Mac, turn it on, and this is the message that you're going to get.
Absolutely.
And we have the accessibility built right in. Is it perfect? Probably, no, but no screen reader is perfect. No operating system is the be end and all end. But I think that's going to say something for the market.
Absolutely.
But I think going back to Daryl's point that, you are right. If you have a whole bunch of, older peripherals, that you don't want to part with, that may not be the way to go for you. But if you have relative, like probably anything, most modern, USB devices, you could probably plug in and they're probably something that'll work. But if you have older stuff, then, maybe that you might either have to, if you decide to upgrade to a Mac, you may have to part with some of those old things. I loved back in, Windows and Linux, I used the Double Talk speech synthesizer. And I didn't think I'd ever change, just because, I was used to that voice and I used it for years. But, I decided that when I went to the Mac that I would try this other voice. And as it turned out, I prefer it now to the old Double Talk voice. So,
yeah, I went and listened to some of the books and stuff that we talked about in the last, when you guys were here about a month ago. And, boy, that Alex voice is something else.
Oh yeah, it's a nice voice.
Yeah. Really,
I've actually loaded. I've made a few books. I was talking last month about Automator, where you can automate some tasks you do all the time. And I've got a little Automator application that will take a text file and convert it to an audio file using Alex, and then put it into iTunes. And I put a few books on my iPod that way, and it's a nice voice just to listen to stuff on.
Yeah, I could read a book with that. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. All right, Tom.
I mean, it's a machine, obviously. Hey,
listen,
but,
thank you. And I want to apologize to Darcy and Holly because they didn't just mean to steal the Darcy and Holly show over here.
No, that's fine. No. That's fine. We do have a couple.
Glad you guys called in, and I'm glad you guys are doing well.
Well, definitely. As soon as I knew that you guys were going to be on, this was priority one.
And anytime you want to try installing Windows, I would appreciate it. Anytime
you want to break my Mac, go right ahead. Yeah.
Hey, listen, they're great people, and these guys, I got to tell you, these guys are real cool. And
That's awesome.
Fantastic. And thank you very much.
Yeah, and they even like Seven Sun, too. So, you know, they got to be good people.
Really?
Well, yeah. It brings tech
like
support
Sun,
for the blind at
like
a whole new
Sun?
Level
exactly.
And a whole new possibility. Talk about job opportunities out there. It's just it.
Absolutely.
Well, listen, Jeff, thank you for letting us come on.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it.
And happy holidays to all of you, to everybody, and your families.
Indeed. You too.
Thanks. All right, have a nice day, guys.
We'll talk to you guys later.
Take care, Darcy and Holly.
All right. 866-400-5333. 866-400-JEFF. We had a caller from the Seattle area, and... Dara, why don't you pick it up? I'm going to try to reach this person. They wanted me to call them back, which is not normally what we do here, but we'll...
We'll make
that.
An exception.
Yeah, we'll do that. I'll do that now, and why don't you pick it up, and why don't we swing a little bit toward the application side of things a little bit, maybe?
Okay, so... What interesting applications? I mean, we know about web browsing and doing, you know, some things like that and email, but you know, what about advanced word processing or spreadsheets or, you know, sort of business productivity?
There's a program, and I think we might have mentioned it briefly last month. There's a new spreadsheet out there called Tables. And it is actually what's really cool is the developers seems very interested in making it usable by VoiceOver, and you know it's still in beta, but every new version that comes out it seems to work, you know, even better. As for word processing, there's one called what is that, Holly?
There's one called Beam, and there's one called
Mariner,
right? Or no?
Something like that.
From Mariner, the Mariner people.
But in actuality, like one thing I know a lot of people use is, believe it or not, TextEdit. And when you hear the name TextEdit, you think, you know, it's probably just like Notepad. But it's actually not. You know, it's got, you know, the spell check and the grammar check, and you can do different fonts, and you can, you know, do some maybe not everything you might need to do in your may not fill all your word processing needs, but probably for the average person who needs to do word processing, TextEdit's probably all they're going to need.
It can read and write word files. I don't think it can do tables.
No, it
I
doesn't
think it can
tables.
Do almost everything else.
We got our caller, by the way, and he has a very interesting question, which if the Mac can do this will be rather interesting. Let's find out. Hello, Darson. Welcome to Main Menu Live.
Well, hi there. Thank you.
You're welcome. And you had a question about, specifically financial software, right?
Yeah, actually about four or five different things, but all sort of the same. If these work with VoiceOver, when I talk with Apple Store, I've only done it at their 800 number, they understand about things working with Leopard, but they don't understand that some of those things don't work with VoiceOver as well.
Okay.
One being a simple financial program, another capability to record voice emails and scanning, then the other one is would I also be able to get books, download books from Bookshare and put them on my bookport.
Okay. Let's see. Let's start with the... are you still listening to the show on your computer, Darson?
Yeah, I got the volume turned down. Do you want me to just hang up? And
yeah, well, why don't we do that? And let me see. Let me just make sure that... I wasn't prepared for five here, so...
As I understand it, I don't see a Bookshare Unpack tool yet for the Mac.
What
so
are voice emails? I don't really understand the question about voice emails.
I would almost definitely say I'm pretty sure there isn't an Unpack tool because I know people have been doing it. I don't know how. See, I, unfortunately, here in Canada, we can't use Bookshare, so that's not a topic I can really comment.
Call Benetech and ask them to do one for the Mac.
Yeah,
if we get more blind people using the Mac, they'll do it.
I don't think that there is, but what you could do is you could.
I've heard you can unpack.
People use it. People use it, but
people
I'm not sure
how
they do
using
it.
So I can't tell you how they're doing it because
I'm not sure if maybe they're able to run the there's a Linux type unpack tool. I wonder if that's.
I'm wondering if they can download. I wonder if they can download the non DAISY version, like a BRF file.
Well, and I've heard that books can be taken from Bookshare onto the Mac, but the thing is to then transfer them from the Mac to the Bookport machine.
I know there is a Unix tool for transferring to the Bookport, and I believe that Greg Kearney has made a GUI version of that to run on the Mac. So
I suspect that if that issue isn't really resolved yet, that will probably come pretty soon, I would think.
I can tell you people are doing it, but I can't tell you how they're doing it. So
Even think Benetech would be willing to even consider if someone were to open source something like that or develop it in for the Mac, that they would entertain someone doing that.
I don't think it could be open source because of the DRM, but I think they would build one.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, and then you had a question about voicemails. Sending voice emails.
Right, just the ability to just record a simple voice, not do any kind of editing or anything, just record a voice message and then attach it to an email to send that they could open in, on a Mac, I don't know what you call it, but Windows Media Player is what I use now.
Darcy, couldn't you do, you guys have something similar to Sound Recorder?
Yeah. Well, the program I use is Audio Hijack Pro. And you can record just about anything with it, and you can save it in whatever format you'd like, whether MP3.
Can you do simple recordings with GarageBand? I think that some people have done really simple, just recording and stop and play stuff with GarageBand too, but I'm not sure.
Right, and I mean,
seems kind
also,
of like overkill to buy
things
GarageBand.
Like, I'm sure you could do that with Audacity.
Yeah,
I know people have been using Audacity. So there are definitely tools to record.
That's a really simple recording, and so there are lots of options for that.
Well, currently I use HandyBits.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a client similar to HandyBits, which on the PC allows you to basically record a message and then have it sent out as an email message.
Does it just basically like as an attachment kind of thing?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know of a thing that would do that automatically, but there's certainly no reason why you couldn't use, I would think even something like, so I've been playing a lot with Automator this past month, and I'm sure there's some way you could automate that process, very easily. So, that's definitely possible.
Okay. And then you had a question about financial software, like a checkbook program.
Yeah, some sort of simple just to keep track of my check register.
Okay, so your check register. So do you guys know of any applications on the Mac that will do that?
I don't use those. I never have.
No,
I use a text file with all my check register information. So I'm not very
So what you're
I'm
saying is you do not balance your checkbook.
I don't know about that.
Okay.
Yeah. We will ask on the list about that, and either next time we're on, or we can let Jeff and Daryl know, they can put something in the show notes or some if there is such a thing.
Yeah, if you find anything out, we'll
I mean, it would be interesting, for instance, because I know that I think Quicken is available for the Mac, and I know that a lot of programs, I know Quicken definitely is not very accessible on Windows, but I know that a lot of programs can be more coincidentally accessible on the Mac, shall we say, it seems like.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't think that Quicken is one of them. At least not, I got a demo of or a trial or something with my MacBook, and I never had much luck with it, so.
Well, one of the things that he needs to keep in mind, Darson, is that you need to keep in mind, too, is that beginning, I think first quarter of next year, and I could be wrong on the timing on this, but it's coming very, very, very soon. Quicken is going to be unveiling a Quicken for the web, which basically will allow you to do your checkbook and everything over the web.
Okay.
And they're really kind of moving that direction in that, you know, you're going to be able to do it all over the web. You could be at work and you could manage your checkbook. You could be on the beach and do it on your mobile phone if you wanted to. You could, you know, that kind of a thing. So,
it's still no guarantee it's going to be accessible, but
Well, their tax site is, and one would hope that they wouldn't use funky, because you know they want to make sure it's going to be used with Firefox, and they want to make sure it's going to be used.
That's what I was going to say. As long as it's not, you know, Internet Explorer specific.
Yeah, as long as and it doesn't have a lot of Ajax, which of course could
or really, Flash.
You know, or Flash. Yeah. Although I wouldn't think Flash would be on a checkbook program. Although, hey, you know, who knows?
Who knows?
Well, the last question I had was about scanning. I periodically like to scan text documents into my computer.
Okay,
scanning.
Something that works. I have like a regular Canon flatbed scanner.
Yeah, I do.
And
too.
I use a program called Red Iris.
Ah.
And I don't know. I'm assuming they have a Leopard version. I haven't used it lately because I haven't installed my scanner again for Leopard, but when I used it, it worked really well. Like, I really liked it, so.
Well, that's what I wondered, if it worked with VoiceOver. I've heard of
it. It does.
So when you,
it's relatively inexpensive, is it not, Holly?
It's like $130 or something, and sometimes they have discounts. I got mine for $59.
They have a sale
had a really
now
big discount.
For just under $100.
Oh, they do? Okay.
Yeah, I would go for that.
Okay.
Because it's a really good program.
All right, Darson, thanks.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF is the phone number if you guys want to call in and ask any questions. So when you installed that, did it bring the document right into your word processor then, or how did that actually work, Darcy? Or Holly, sorry.
The scanner?
Yeah.
The scanning?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think it made it into like a rich text document, or you can make it into a regular text document, and then it would open it, or you could do large batch scanning, or, you know, whether you do multiple pages, and it just saves it to like a text file, and then you can go in and edit or whatever you need to do with it.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, so it doesn't have its own, you know, editor, like similar to OmniPage or something like that on the PC.
No, it doesn't. It's a really simple program.
Well, that's good,
but,
though.
Because it worked really well when I played with it. It didn't have a lot of errors, and it did have errors because it's OCR, but it didn't have a huge number of errors.
And do you know which OCR engine it used?
Or? No, I don't know that.
I know that's for learning disabilities, but I know it includes, isn't Curzo 3000 on the Mac?
I think actually that is accessible too. I believe I heard that somewhere. I haven't actually tried it, but I think it is. I think it's quite a bit more expensive than Red Iris.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. You might want to try Red Iris first and see if it meets your needs before going into before getting something like that. But yeah, there is a version of Criswell 3000 for the Mac.
Oh, interesting.
If it's the kind of thing. I don't know if they'd ever do K1000 or not. I don't know.
No, I don't
how
think
many
that's
people.
Yeah, I don't know if that's currently available or not. But
look, guys. I mean, the cool thing now is, right? I mean, even if you didn't want to go with VMware, if you want to run Windows, you know, won't be running them at the same time. But if you want a dual boot system, you've already got that capability with Boot Camp, so
best of all worlds. What's cool about that is later, like, suppose you partition your drive or whatever, you've got a Windows partition, and later on you decide you want to use VMware, run them at the same time, VMware can access that Windows partition, so you don't have to do anything different. You know, if you've already got Windows set up with Boot Camp, you can move on to
And how do you select? So when you boot your machine, how do you select which operating system you want and how accessible is that?
Option key. I think you hit the option key at boot up. That's actually how you do a lot of things at boot in the Mac. Like, for example, if you want to boot off the CD, you know, you hit the letter C when it first starts to boot, that sort of thing. And I think you hit the option key and you get a you know, obviously you get like a choice.
But you don't get Windows. You don't get speech during that.
No, you wouldn't get speech there, but I would suspect that I would think that Actually, I don't know if it starts at the same place, like if you were in Last in Windows, if it's on Windows, or if it...
Oh, so that's similar to the way it works in Windows. If you have a dual boot, then you have to...
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how that would work, but I know, like I said, again, I know people do it. I've not installed Windows on this machine, but that's definitely an option, and that is free to do. I mean, obviously you need a copy of Windows, but, you know, the boot camp thing is free.
Hey guys, we have a caller, and I'm kind of surprised he's actually here tonight because normally he is doing his own show, and it's Paul Edwards. Hey, Paul.
How are you?
Well, hello there.
How's it going?
It's going wonderfully. I think you've got all of my crowd. There's me and my other recorder, Steve Bauer, in the other program. But I wanted to really quickly make four or five points that
sure.
might help clarify some things that have come up, and then I'm going to go back and see if I can persuade some folks to come to my program. First, there absolutely is an unpack tool for the Mac from Bookshare.
Interesting.
And it works.
Hey, good. I thought there was, Nick.
And it's actually been there for about 2 years, so it's they were early adopters, as it were. The other thing is, Kurzweil 3000 is available in a Mac version. Kurzweil 1000 currently is not, but I've been told it would be a doable thing if there was really sufficient demand. But programs like Red Iris actually do work well enough that there are a lot of people who think that there really isn't a need for other scanning programs in the Mac. Also, the OmniPage works fine and is perfectly accessible in the Mac version as well.
Wow, okay, good.
So you really do actually have some choices in terms of scanning.
So are you using a Mac, Paul?
Yes.
Really? Interesting. I didn't realize that. Now, are you dual booting with your Mac then, or how are you
doing
that?
Not at all.
No.
I started using a Mac because my wife, Cheryl, has been a Mac user for about the last 8 or 10 years. She was one of the beta testers for VoiceOver when it came out, wouldn't switch from the Mac, I don't think, unless she was paid. Well, I'm not even sure you could pay her enough money to make her do it. And there is an awful lot that I like about the Mac. And there are two quick things that I wanted to add to the discussion that I don't think have really been discussed enough. One of the hardcore values of the folks who developed VoiceOver for the Mac was that they were not going to build an off-screen model. And the importance of this is that the Mac operates for blind people exactly the same way as it does for sighted folks. So if for some reason you can't make something work, your sighted friend from right next to you in the office can show you how to do it, and can make it work. It's not like JAWS or Window Eyes, where if a sighted person tries to do something, they're actually not going to be able to interact well with JAWS because of the off-screen model making the cursor a little bit unpredictable and so on. And so, for me, that's kind of fascinating, and it's led to some issues, some good, some bad. I think that it's one of the reasons that Mac is a little kludgy in terms of the way that it interacts with Safari, which is the Mac's version of Internet Explorer. And I say it's kludgy in that you have to make some choices as you go along, and it's not quite as wonderful. For instance, you look at a web page like looking at a number of groups, and then in order to get into that particular group and make a selection, you have to actually highlight that group and then get to the particular spot that you want to.
Oh, that's interesting.
but it really works well, and I guess I would really reinforce what the young lady said earlier, and that is, we need to pay more attention to the Mac because of the fact that for an awful lot of people who don't have extra money to spend, they can go into a store and buy a computer and have accessibility. And right now, there are far too many people in the Windows environment that are discouraging people from even trying Macs. And I absolutely and categorically believe that in a lot of the areas where screen readers are king, there is some real unfounded and inappropriate prejudice against Macs, and I don't think they've been given a level playing field to play in, and I really admire you guys very much for opening up this program and giving folks an opportunity to talk about what Macs
can
do.
We as Mac users are still kind of doing damage control from that that article a couple of years ago in the Access World. So, you know, there were things in there that, you know, we're still telling people that aren't really...
I know one of the things that I, you know, when I give people my thoughts, one of the things that I tell people, and I think that any Windows person should be sure to do so, especially when this is a fact, is that, you know, I don't yet really have very much, well, I don't hardly have any Mac experience, so, and I think a lot of, it was obvious from the article and from some other things that I've seen, that's coming from people that don't have a lot of experience, so it should be important for people to have experience, considerable experience in both platforms.
Right.
I think the other thing...
There's not an awful lot that you can't do on the Mac that you can do on Windows. Not an awful lot. I mean, there are probably a few things. I'm trying to think. Well, you know, one thing you can certainly do better on the Mac now is iTunes. I mean, iTunes functions.
I was
going
to say, there's one thing. You know,
iTunes,
we have
fantastic.
Better access to iTunes than
on the Mac, and is a pain in the in the Windows environment.
Now, have you found Paul because obviously you're working, you know, in an environment where you're having to deal with, you know, office documents and spreadsheets,
yep.
and you know, all that type of a thing. Are you finding that you're having to boot into Windows to accomplish some of those tasks?
No.
Not at all. Not at all. Okay.
No.
So because one of the things and I need to get Apple to send me a Mac to review. Maybe I'll.
There you go.
No, I'm kidding.
I want one.
Pull your strings, Darcy and Holly, and get me a Mac.
Oh, yeah, we have connections.
Give Steve a call and get him
the
shit.
If I had those kind of strings...
Be right with you.
Yeah.
So, okay. All right, Paul, we'll let you go to get back to your show, but we appreciate you calling in.
Well, and once more, I just want to compliment Main Menu for being prepared to be open and running the kind of program that you're running on the Mac where... What you're doing is exploring what can be done, not pardon my French, bitching about what can't.
Well, just to let you know, Paul, that one of the things that we're going to be trying to do is at least once a month or at least once every other month or so to have a show where we're dedicating it to the Mac. And as we continue to go here, we want to dive in deeper and deeper and really get more into, you know, specific applications. You know, for example, I would love to get some really in-depth knowledge on recording on the Mac, and how does it handle multiple, you know, sound cards and things like that.
We actually have a question from Dan.
Okay, good. We'll get to that in just a minute. We'll get to that in just a minute. So just to let you know that we are really 2008. We're really going to try and make sure that the Mac is really well represented and make sure to get as much information out there as
I think that's very cool. And the other thing that I think we all need to do is we need to get hold of George Buys and tell him that it really is inappropriate that the software that we use for a lot of these programs is not really Mac compatible, and that he really does need not just to promise to fix it but actually get it done.
Well, there you go. Mm-hmm. That would be good. Yeah.
So,
all right.
Everybody should send George an email.
Well, we should get you and your wife on maybe in January, and we can talk more Mac with you guys along with Darcy and Holly. That would be great.
Well, I think it'd be great to get Cheryl on. Cheryl knows 50,000 times more about the Mac than I do.
Okay. Well, I'll be
a great spokesperson.
I'll be in touch with you about that.
Cool. Thanks, Jeff. Okay. And thanks very much for having me on.
All right. Well, good luck with your show over there.
Thanks. Okay. So far, there's just me. I'm not sure if I'm going to talk about memorable Christmases for an hour and a quarter.
We're going to talk about online Christmas shopping yet next, everyone. So
stay
right here.
We did that last week, so we beat you. No, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, we're going to continue on with the Mac stuff as long as Darcy and Holly are willing to stay until we're out of questions, and then we'll switch topics.
And Darcy and Holly, thanks very much. You guys are good ambassadors.
All right.
Thank you.
We'll see you, Paul.
Take care.
All righty. 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF. And we had a question from Dan?
We did. He said, hey, so what about internet broadcasting software on the Mac?
There's a program called Nicecast, and it's from the same people who make Audio Hijack Pro. They make a lot of various audio-related tools. And there's Nicecast, and it I've played a little bit with it, but...
Is it accessible?
Yeah, completely.
It's a server. Like it does its own server.
It's both a client and a server, but you can connect to an external server, like if you did a show at a radio station.
Oh, what about does it?
It's
does
not
it support,
free though.
Does it? Oh, it's not. That's interesting. So
no.
Does it support Shoutcast?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. Good.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, but station's not free either. So I mean,
yeah, that's
if you want to do it right, it's not. It's usually not free. I mean, there's some people who do it free, but
and you know that's one thing that's really interesting about the Mac is you have a few of your main developers like Apple and Adobe and stuff like that, but a lot of the Mac developers are these little independent companies, and there's actually a couple of pluses there. First of all, it usually means their software is pretty cheap. Like, you know, Audio Hijack Pro is $32, and for what it does, it's definitely worth it. And the other thing that's kind of interesting, because there are a lot of small little companies, you know, a lot of people have had success saying, can you make this work with VoiceOver? And, you know, because they have VoiceOver, they can try it, and they know what we're talking about. And a lot of people have done it. You know,
and isn't it, I just have to explain a little bit of irony that I think I see. Isn't it ironic that a lot of times you can get these small little companies to be more accessible, and then, you know, sometimes it's a little more difficult, shall we say, with the bigger companies that you would think could, you know, have billions of dollars and
if it takes, you know, say it takes a half hour to an hour to make your, I've not done DevOps, so I don't know how much it took, but say even if you took a couple hours to make your thing accessible, if that meant a few sales, you know, that's a big thing to a small company.
That's true.
A big company, that's, you know.
But I've written companies before, and they usually are really receptive to making VoiceOver
to making
compatible.
Changes, and because, you know, like I said, often it will mean a sale, and there's a lot of blind people looking for software, usually if you know, somebody says, you know, such and such a program works, other people will probably check it out as well, so.
Yeah.
I actually had a really interesting experience with that along those lines. Transmission, which is a program that I use, a torrent program, I downloaded the latest version, and I noticed that there were a few unlabeled buttons that were labeled before, and they were unlabeled for some reason. I think they changed them to from tabs to buttons or something. And so it was open source thing. So I went on the forums and I said, can you make these buttons have, you know, accessibility tags or whatever they were called? An hour later it was done. And it was just the coolest thing because it was just like, you know, instantaneous. They fixed it. And it was so cool. And I was really excited about it because it was like, you know.
Now, can you label unlabeled buttons? Can you?
No, I can't.
You can't, so you don't have a graphics dictionary like you do with it?
No, that's all within, like, there are tags, like, I guess when you use the interface builder to build stuff, you know, there are tags, like, for a label and, like, the help tags and stuff like that, and you put it in there.
So you don't have a way of sort of saying, you know, in this application, treat this button, you know, and call it X.
No, you don't.
No, in this instance, you can do something that sort of reads the tooltips of the buttons, and they were still accessible, but I wanted it to, you know, actually say, you know, upload button or something. I didn't want to have to do an extra thing, so then I just got them to fix it.
Do you find that to be inhibitive? in an application, say, that is not as accessible? Or do you tend just to steer away from those applications?
You know, it tends to be that most applications, if they don't have the tag, like the access, the label or whatever, I need to find out the names for these things, but then you can hit the voiceover and the H for help, and it will give you what Holly said is the tool tip. So it's not even usually that big a deal.
No, it's not really inhibitive. It's just kind of, I figured it was something simple that they could do. If it was more complicated, you know, I wouldn't have known how to fix it, so I don't know if I would have bothered. But something simple like that, you can write the developer, and usually they're pretty, you know, receptive
like
to fix
most
it, even
modern,
if it's more complicated.
Most modern programs, you know, the buttons are often labeled. Like, they're labeled more than you might think they'd be.
Could you fix that with like, AppleScript? You know, for example, could you write a script in, you know, on AppleScript and say, you know, when you get focused to this, I mean, you may not know the answer to this, but if when you get focused to this button, you know, speak this string of text. I mean, I'm just trying to think about applications that.
So.
Okay.
Now I know that Greg Kearney has actually gone, because you can go into the application, like into like one of those application files like I talked about before, and I think he was actually able to, you know, bring up the files into Interface Builder and I think add buttons, like, but add labels to certain things. I know he's done stuff
like
that.
Yeah, I think he did that.
I don't know. I haven't tried in this version. I don't know how accessible Interface Builder is in now. It wasn't before, and I think there's still some ways to go there. Like, I don't know if I could do that. I think you might need some site to do that. But, I mean, a lot of times, like I said, it's just a matter of emailing people, and they will, you know, they'll do it. People.
Interesting.
It must mean it would you know, a theory may be that it's you know, I've heard from other sources that it's easier to do with Coco than it is with you know, C++
yeah.
and all that stuff on Windows.
Yeah, I think it must be easier. Yeah.
Are you finding that the majority of the applications that are now available are now written in Coco, or are you still finding that there's a great deal of them that are out there that are not?
I think a lot of people are writing in Coco now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, more often than not, when I want to try something, it will work. Like, more often than not, when I want to try a program, you know, it will work. And in some instances, I think it works. It can work better. I use a Slingbox, and I find that the Mac client for the Slingbox works a lot better than the PC client does.
Oh, I hate the PC Slingbox client.
Oh, you have a Slingbox
because
joke?
You can't get to the.
You can't get to the menu bar.
Oh, nice.
You can't hit the Alt to get to the menu bar in the PC version. You have to use the mouse, and it works great on the Mac. And even Skype, I really like Skype on the Mac.
Yeah, me too.
So there are some programs that I, you know, if they're using some sort of other toolkit other than Coco, like you know, some cross-platform things, they are not going to work at all. Like, I tried that program Juice one time, and there was nothing. There was no output at all.
No.
So
that's all right.
Juice Receiver.
Juice is dead.
No,
anyway.
not Juice. Juiced. The video thing.
Oh, Juiced. That doesn't work on the PC either.
Oh, okay.
I thought you said Juice too.
I thought you said Juice Receiver. Does Juice Receiver work?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
Everybody uses iTunes.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So you're using that for all of your podcasting stuff.
Pardon?
So you're using that for all of your podcasting stuff, not just the iTunes store?
Yep.
Nope.
Yeah, using podcasting.
Yeah, subscribe to all our feeds in there, and it's.
So you're doing just like the most sighted people already listen to podcasts.
Hmm?
Yeah, that's cool. We have a question from Bill.
Okay, go ahead, Daryl.
Bill says, "What sounds like a downside to me using the Mac is the torturous keystroke commands for voice actions. Can Darcy and Holly talk about how configurable the voice commands may be with VoiceOver? Thanks."
Okay,
oh,
well,
great question,
when
yeah.
I first heard, and I think it actually was on Main Menu, when I heard that the first time I heard a VoiceOver review, I thought the same thing. I thought, I don't want to hold down Option Control for everything that I do. I don't want to do that. But now, it's it's just become second nature. But also, it's not like you have to do that with everything. You know, just like with some Windows programs, you know, you can use the tab to move between fields and dialog boxes, and you can use the arrows just like you normally would.
And so you can also lock the control and option keys. So if you...
Yeah, if you press control, option, semicolon, it locks them down, so then you just you don't have to hold them down anymore. It's you'd be surprised how, you know, like when I got my Mac, within a couple hours that I was comfortable with it, and I was surprised by that too.
I was really skeptical about that too, because I was like, I'm never going to remember all these things.
Like
and it's
that,
gonna be
that
awkward
almost. Because when I first heard of it, I really wanted a Mac just because I knew that people who had them really liked them, but that was almost a turnoff for me. But then, you know, once I had a chance to play around a bit, I mean, it's just like...
After a while, you don't really even think about it. Like, after a while, you don't think about, I'm holding down, you know, six keys. You just, your hands just do it, because it's just...
Well, I mean, you do some, you know, all the things you have to do in JAWS, all the various commands. But and also, I should point out, if you have a keyboard, and this is new in Leopard, if you have a keyboard with a numeric keypad, you can assign, like you can use those as well. You can assign keys to the numeric keypad.
And use those for most of your navigation, you can.
And use those for all your navigation. So if that really turns you off, the control option thing, you have that as an option as well.
Do I dare ask if they have a JAWS emulation mode if you have a numeric keypad?
Well,
I think somebody was going to do that. Somebody was going to make some predefined settings, like a JAWS type thing and a WindowEyes type thing.
Wow. That's interesting.
That should be
interesting. I'm not sure, again, going back to what we said before, I'm not sure that I would start with that, though, because I think you really, before you start doing stuff like that, you really should kind of get used to how things are done on the Mac. So, I mean, maybe you want to go through that eventually if you really find it works better for you, but...
I think you can reassign a lot of the keys, so if you find, well, you know, this just isn't working, I want my 2 to be, you know, left arrow or something, you can do that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's all customizable, the numpad thing. My obviously I don't have a numpad, so I haven't been able to play with that, but I've gotten so used to using control option, it's kind of muscle memory at this point, you know, that's how I'm used to doing stuff now. So.
Yeah.
Now you mentioned the access.
I never used my numpad in Windows, so.
Oh, really? That's interesting. So now you guys mentioned the Access World article that came out a couple of years ago, and I know we already talked probably a lot, about a lot of these things, but did you want to address any of those issues and sort of...
Well, all right. I don't want to get... But, like, at best, I will say that thing was poorly researched. You know, maybe it's even worse than that. I don't really... But, I mean, there were just things that were wrong. Like, they said there's no spell check, when in reality there is a spell check. And, you know... And they talked just about other things that
didn't they say there was no way to access the menu bar too or something?
Yeah, there was no way to access the menu bar. There was no. I'm trying to think of what some of the other things were. It was a while ago now.
Now, but was that true back then, or was that is that
no?
Okay. No, I'm just no. I'm
that was never been true.
Okay. I'm just checking.
I believe they got a review unit. You know, after Tiger came out, and then they wrote their article based on that. And there's actually some really good links online. I don't have them at hand, where people kind of dissect that article point by point and really kind of take
it. And maybe it was just a matter of poorly researched.
I think we should say that there certainly we were not. Nobody here is saying that there was any deliberate intent involved.
No,
was,
I think what probably happened here is you probably had a JAWS or WindowEyes user who was said,
and they didn't take the time to really sit down and learn.
They probably said we need an article for next month's edition, and go play with this Mac and write an article.
But as I understand now, and maybe I'm wrong, and
I don't know
I hope
either.
Someone will correct me if I am, but I believe that a lot of people have emailed corrections, and I don't know if those have ever been printed. I'd love to be proven wrong there, but I don't think
I haven't seen anything.
AFB.org/accessworld is the website for.
So I mean, they If they didn't know then, they should know now, is what I'm saying?
Well, there's certainly been podcasts. There's certainly been lots of demonstrations. I mean, John has done extensive stuff here on Main Menu. I mean, we've had and hours, like, and hours and hours of coverage, and so.
Oh yeah, you know. And like we've done stuff, and yeah. we've Blind Cool Text had stuff on. So there's a lot of stuff out there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of websites out there now you can go to, and it's. Like I said before, when Paul was on, people saw that. People saw that article, and I think that colored a lot of people's perceptions. And I think now that Leopard's come out and people thought, okay, well, this isn't just something they're trying, they're actually improving on this, I think there are a lot of people who are starting to take a second look.
Well, I think you're right. I think, and honestly, one of the things that I was thinking about when they came out with VoiceOver was, okay, this is strictly a 508 stopgap. meaning we've done enough to get into the schools and that's it. But I was shocked. I read RSS feeds like crazy, and I was shocked to read an article where, Apple announced that they were adding Braille support and Braille display support and all this stuff. And mm-hmm. I really was very pleasantly surprised to hear that, and I think now that does show that there's commitment to continue to evolve the product and to make sure that it's maintained.
Apple has a long way to go, but I think they've really on VoiceOver are some really dedicated people.
They really though? I mean, it sounds like they've pretty much. I mean, it sounds like to me that if you program to the Apple programming standards using Cocoa, that there's no reason why no application wouldn't be accessible. I mean,
well, see, there's the problem is, the screen reader is pretty solid, but there are some of Apple's own programs that aren't where they should be.
Just like us.
And the thing is, and Apple is very keeps everything close to the vest. Like, you won't know. Like,
yes,
nobody
yeah.
knew iTunes was going to be accessible until, the first one of us downloaded it and, hey, it's accessible now. And it wasn't in the release notes. It wasn't anywhere. It was just, it works now.
That's too bad.
Which
that's
is frustrating
really
on the one hand. It's really frustrating, but at the same time, it's, like, nice to, like, get a nice surprise, like, oh, it now works. You know, it's nice to have something not work and then, suddenly work again.
So yeah. I think it's got they've got some a little ways to go, but I think they've made big strides, and I think if they keep up what they're doing, if they keep at the pace they're going, I think we should see some really good things. And I think to echo what Paul said, this is a really good platform for people, because I've known a lot of people who don't have a lot of extra money and who are using maybe a version of JAWS or Window Eyes that are 3 or 4 versions old. And, it's just, or maybe, they've managed to find either, they're using the free ones, or they've, and it's just nice that you don't have to worry about that with the Mac. I mean, when you buy the upgrade to your operating system, you get VoiceOver with it. And I think
that's a really good thought, because I just took a call from a friend of mine here in Tucson, and she was quite behind in her JAWS SMA accounts. And so it was going to cost her about, $600 to upgrade to JAWS 9, because of the way that the model, both Freedom Scientific and GW Micro do this, because that's their business model. And that $600, boy, you could put that with a couple hundred dollars more and buy a Mac.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Very
and
interesting.
You've got the computer, you've got the operating system, and you've got the screen reader.
Yeah. Okay, Daryl, go ahead with Chris's question.
All right. So Chris says, hey, how about antivirus programs like Nod32? Any accessible there?
As of right now,
I think the last virus on the Mac was in, 98, something like that. you could obviously, if you're using Windows, you could obviously run like in Boot Camp or whatever,
right.
run a thing there. there isn't, well, one of the things it does, one of the things the Mac does, and I think Vista has this now to some extent, is, you know, you can run as a limited user, right? You have your limited user and you have your administrator.
So right. So viruses and spyware aren't the same threat that they are on
right.
Windows.
So like,
but if you want to get, there are a few Mac antivirus programs out there. Do you know if any of them are accessible? Well, I know Norton Antivirus is out there on the Mac, and
I don't.
So you don't run one right now.
No, I don't run one. And the thing is, if you run as a non-user and something happens and all of a sudden it wants you to log in as an administrator, you know, you're going to start to wonder what's, because the only thing it can do is touch your home files, so it can't get any of. And not to say, I mean, there probably will be. I mean, everything has security holes. But there hasn't really been anything for a while that, you know, viruses or spyware that have, you know, there have been, like, some proof of concept things, but I don't know that there's been anything out
there. I think
there have
been a couple of things in the wild lately, but I think it's, like, you have to actually
You have to install something. Like, there was one, I think, that was a thing where you had to, it told you to view this kind of video, you had to install a special codec, but you had to actually go and do that. You know, it wasn't like just going to a website or downloading an attachment would make this happen. So
Leo Laporte on Saturday's show was talking about this exact issue. And he was talking about, did you guys listen to his show?
We listen to all his podcasts, but sometimes we don't get through his radio show.
Yeah. While I'm doing stuff, I'll turn his radio show on, and this lady called and asked about viruses on the Mac, and he said exactly the same thing. You know, that the very first thing that you should do is, you know, create a user that's not an administrator and run under a limited account. There's no real reason why you need to do that, and if you need administrative privileges, you'll be prompted to get them.
Yep. So, and that's what I do, and that's what a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And I think he recommends that people don't do the antivirus programs right now because there's no viruses, and it's just kind of you're wasting your money at this point. And he said, you know, there might be viruses in the future, but right now there's not any, so don't spend your money
probably,
on it.
You know, if you use all the same good computing practices that you use in Windows, you know, don't open attachments you don't know, you know, download your programs from reputable sources, you know, things like that, you'll probably go a long way to protecting yourself.
Yeah, if most people did that, they wouldn't need antivirus programs.
Exactly.
You know, I'm serious. I mean, you know, you don't go places you shouldn't and stuff like that. Then
except the only issue is in Windows, it's easier to masquerade things, right? You know, it's easier to get control.
But the majority of viruses that people get are because they're clicking on links and emails.
Exactly.
They're opening up attachments, you know, and doing all kinds of fun stuff. So
yeah, and that's if you practice safe computing practices, I think it would be a better way to go. And that actually brings up an interesting point, because I think for a lot of people, I really think, especially if you're not very computer literate, I think, you know, a Mac might be a better way to go for a lot of people, because I mean, how many times do you go over to somebody's house to work on their computer and it's just full of spyware? You know, you can't even do anything because, like, you open up Internet Explorer and about 12 pop-ups come up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Or it's so slow that you can't do anything because there's a million pieces of spyware. And they don't know people don't know what spyware is. And, you know, it's hard to, you can install virus things and spyware for them, but, you know, whether they'll run it or keep it up to date, a Mac is, and I don't want to tell people that, you know, that it could never happen. Because I'm sure it could, and I'm sure it will at some point. But I think you're a lot safer. I mean, it has the track record kind of the Mac.
What are you guys using to read RSS feeds on the Mac?
Mail.
The Mail application has in Leopard now has RSS support. Like, it just shows up. It's like you know, you can set up folders and whatnot.
Okay, so
and
it just shows up like folders,
more
then?
Mail. Like it's it just shows up. Like it's, you know, more mail that you're getting, and
that's cool. Outlook
does that.
I really
like the way it does RSS.
Outlook 2007 does that. The only problem with Outlook 2007, which according to the Office 2007 Service Pack 1 release notes today, because it was released today, this is fixed. But if you have a large PST file, then it will take about 6 or 7 minutes to get Outlook open. So there you go.
that's a lot.
Yeah, that's a long time. I use Mail, and Safari also does a pretty good job, but I like having everything sort of a view, an overview of what my RSS articles are, and then I can choose to read, you know, the ones I'm interested in.
We have a caller, and it's Danny. Let me bring him in. Hello, Danny. How's it going?
Going well, thank you.
Oh, good. How can we help you tonight, sir?
I've got a question, and at your discretion, I can either hang on for the answer or I can hang up.
Okay, well, it depends on the question. Go right ahead.
Well, I've got Tiger 10.4.11, and I noticed that after upgrading to that, I could no longer go to certain websites and scroll through tables. And I thought, well, if I upgrade to Leopard, I'll be okay. So I went to the store, the Apple store, and played with their system. And it was worse yet. And the people at Apple said, oh, you're at the store, they said, you're doing everything right, but for some reason VoiceOver is skipping over the scroll tables and won't even let you interact with them or know where they are or nothing.
Now, is that just a specific site, Danny, or is that all sites?
Different ones, but this I like checking my mail on SA Mobile, and I just can't do that anymore, and I'm wondering when Apple's going to come out with a fix for that. Has anyone else noticed a bug in the way Safari acts up?
Okay.
I've talked to other people that have.
Okay. Do you have any questions for them?
Yeah. Have any of you noticed such a problem after upgrading?
Right. Darcy or Holly, do you have any questions for him on that?
Are you talking about like multi-selection list boxes? Like,
is that it's a scroll bar, and you interact with that, and then you get a table, and you interact with that, and I get my list of messages, and I could scroll. And now I can't even find the darned the scroll bar in question.
Hmm.
And the people at Apple say I'm doing everything right, but that there's a bug in either VoiceOver or Safari. And I think the only way I'm going to have to do it is to reinstall my whole system, which is kind of a...
No, I think it's a bug in VoiceOver. Mm-hmm. The way VoiceOver handles those particular controls now.
And
I would... You know what, I would...
And I know
I would,
that Apple... I think Apple is aware of it.
Yeah.
Mm.
But I would...
Well,
I would
think that Apple... I think
email.
Their philosophy ought to be... We can't afford to lose a single customer. Because they're doing good, but they need to really work on this VoiceOver bit. And one question for you... I would say
my impression would be... Because of course the SA Mobile site is pretty simple. I mean it's it's not a very complicated site. So that would be a little bit of a concern for me as a web user.
I haven't
found any websites. I guess I don't use any that uses that kind of table. But
it's a multi-select list box. That's what
okay.
I understand.
Okay.
It's like they have them on Southwest.com as well, and you can't use Southwest.com right now.
Yeah, it's okay. So that is definitely a bug that they know about, and
but even still, I would email accessibility@apple.com and voice your concerns.
At apple.com, and tell them, because you know the more people that do that, it's going to go up the chain, I would think, up the priority levels, and you know let them know, because people have reported that before, the multi-selection list.
Well, and they can't fix it if they don't know about it too, so. I mean, it's important to let them know if you find something like that.
Okay. All right, Danny, does that help?
I've been doing that too, so thank you. And
you're welcome.
I'm thinking of... I'll let you know my idea for a future show in an email. How can I email that?
You can send that to mainmenu@acbradio.org.
Terrific.
And we'd love to hear from you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
This week we bring you a software review from two users, Michael Fear and Mary. The program we're talking about is Calendar Magic version 16.8, available from www.stokepoges.plus.com. One of the things that blind people are often looking for is a good reminder program, a good calendar program, and a good calculator, among other things. Apparently, this program does all of that and much more. It's not written specifically for blind people, and so there are a few small accessibility issues, but according to the users, nothing that can't be dealt with easily. If you're interested, go check out the review at www.accesswatch.info. Also, check out our blog at http://accesswatch.wordpress.com. Have a great week.
You're listening to Main Menu Live, airing at 2 hours Universal on Wednesday. To participate in the show, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
It looks like Daryl's internet connection has died.
Oh.
Yeah. Let me try to get Holly, and we can finish up here. Let's see here. Here we are. So I was wondering what happened. I mentioned Seven Sun, and of course everything went dark, and I was wondering if that was a conspiracy or what that was.
It was Kilroy.
That was Kilroy. That's right. Kilroy 2.0 was here. That's right. Holly?
Yep.
Oh, there you are.
I'm here.
Daryl's internet connection has died.
Oh.
Yes, so he is off the internet at the moment. quite a bad thing, but
yeah.
I just wanted to find out if you guys had an opportunity to read the conclusion of Seventh Son.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Ah,
that was
yes.
Good.
Yeah, that was great, wasn't it? Well, that ending was something else.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
so let's go ahead. What?
Well, I was just going to say that was a great set of books. It's sad to see it end, though. It was, you know, for the last, 2 years almost?
Yeah, yeah.
Like
it took
that long. A year
and a half,
at least. It's been, you know.
And it's long. It's about almost 3 gig of MP3 files if you were to download the whole thing.
And, you know, to talk about, because you started to talk about our podcast before, we, back before we started book three, we had a chance to interview J.C. Hutchins. And oh man, it couldn't have been a nicer guy. I mean, we talked with him for a good hour and a half on the show, and a really nice guy. And it was a lot of fun talking to him. So.
Oh wow, I missed that one. I have to get that.
It's still up there. You can get it, and we have all our shows up there right from back from the beginning. So, but it was a lot of fun. We had it wasn't really much in the way of like a formal interview. We were just having a conversation.
Sure.
And it
yeah.
kind of jumped around, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
that's
great.
Really nice guy. Really, yeah.
That's great.
Really cool guy to talk to.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about each of your podcasts? And while I'm going to actually try to get Daryl back on the phone, and so I'll let you two go ahead and talk a little bit about each of those, because I know you have at least two, and I know at least I think three now at least. And so why don't you guys go ahead and do that, and I'll be right back with you.
Okay, Holly, why don't you go ahead and tell them about our shows.
We have the Darcy and Holly Show, which is our general chat show. We kind of talk about whatever is on our minds and whatever we feel like talking about, and that's at www.darcyandholly.com. Darcy and Holly all spelt out.
Yep, and then we have... Go ahead.
Well, I was going to let you do the screen switchers.
Okay, well, if you liked what you've been hearing tonight, you might want to check out our Mac podcast, which is at www.screenlessswitchers.com. And you can find all the shows up there. And also, we should mention another site that we've been kind of involved with is www.lioncourt.com. And it's got a lot of great information up there for Mac users. He's been putting up a weekly tip section, these little quick tips. He's got a section that's really good for people considering switching. It's like the top Mac myths. And he kind of goes through each one and comments on it. So,
and he also has an article about it's called Memoirs of a Blind Switcher, and it's from the point of view of someone who switched.
And what's that website address again?
www.lioncourt.com. And it's we've been kind of involved with. I haven't written anything up there, but I think Holly's put some stuff up there.
Lioncourt, Lioncourt.
Lioncourt.com. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's also called Maccessibility, but there's no... It's not. It's the name of the site's Mac Accessibility.
Okay,
yeah,
there's a blog. There's a Mac Accessibility blog. Is that on the same? Is that hosted on the
it
same?
It could be
site?
That. It could be that.
Yeah, okay. It is a blog. It's a WordPress blog.
Okay.
Yeah, and so if, you know, check out Screenless Switchers, check out LineCourt.com, and of course, if anybody has any questions about the Mac, you know, we always like to answer questions from people, and you can always email us at show at ScreenlessSwitchers.com.
Okay.
And, you know, both of us will get that, and usually whichever one of us kind of reads it first will probably answer it. So, you know, we always like to talk to people about the Mac, so if you've got any questions, you can feel free to drop us a line there.
All right, great. I got Daryl back on the phone because, but it looks like your internet connection may be back. Daryl?
Yeah, finally.
Yes.
How the strangest thing. I didn't do anything. I didn't fix it.
How evil of it.
That
speakeasy wasn't so easy tonight.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure even that it was that because the phone was still up and running. So that may not be the issue.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah. All right. Well, now one of the things Darcy and Holly that I wanted to try to explore, and then probably the next time we'll get you on, maybe will be either because of course January 8th would be the first time we come back, and because we're going to be gone, you know, for the holidays, would be to talk about audio recording and Hijack Pro, and I don't know if you guys would be willing to put something together to show how that would work, and then to come on and
you
know, come on, yeah, come on live afterward.
Sure. Oh, definitely.
Yeah, that would be great.
I've been meaning to do that for a while. I've got some ideas for some demos to do for both Screenless Switchers and, you know, make them available to you guys as well. So, yeah, we can definitely do that because I think that you're right. That's something a lot of people want to know about. There's a lot of people. We can show Audio Hijack Pro and Sound Studio, which is the because Audio Hijack Pro basically just records, like that's basically what it does.
Okay.
And then you have to use an editor to you know.
Okay, so it's not all inclusive.
No. They have a program called Fission, the people who make Audio Hijack Pro, and they have a bundle where you can buy them both together. And Fission's a pretty basic editor. Basically, what they designed it for was like, clipping out things, like maybe you recorded an internet stream and you want to clip some stuff out of it. Like it's not a very advanced program, and it's nice for a few things. But then there's Sound Studio, which is probably the closest thing, at least accessibility wise and feature wise, that we have to SoundForge on the Mac. And I've been using that quite a bit, and it's a nice piece of software as well. So we can talk about, you know, the different, you know, the ways to record and then how you might edit on the Mac.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Do you find that it's really responsive when you're doing audio editing on the Mac?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you don't find it to be any, you know, sluggish at all or anything like that?
Oh, no. Just, it works quite well. And actually, that's one thing, another thing that you can do with some of the cool things with programs like Sound Studio is a lot of modern programs have, things, you know, you can script them, you can control them through either AppleScript or Automator. And like one of the things I did just as a little time saver is, you know, I have one of those, you know, we have one of those you know, those K7 voicemail numbers that you get, and the file that you get is a really low quality WAV file, and you know, I was able with just some of the Automator actions that come with Sound Studio, I have this little application that I open the WAV file with this application. It will automatically resample it, you know, convert it to stereo, and then save it again. And there's just a lot of little automatic things you can do.
That's cool.
To save you some time.
Do you find that for example, if I'm in SoundForge and I put the quality up at really, you know, really high, so that of course the MP3 file comes out as best as it can. At least on my older machine. Now, of course, this is really somewhat of a processor issue, but of course, it's really an architectural issue as well. Have you found that the Mac gets really sluggish when doing that type of a thing, or do you find that it handles, you know, that, you know, type of a task better than,
you
say,
save
on a PC?
Or encode a large MP3
well, like
file.
If you're saving or encoding, sometimes what you're doing, like sometimes that the screen that you're in, like the saving progress dialog, might be a little bit sluggish to work through. But if you, like, say for example, if you switch to another application, that seems to work just fine. I don't know if that's the whole like dual core thing going on, or what, but it can be processor intensive, and I can always tell when I'm doing something like that because the MacBook's fan starts to come on. But I can do other things while that's happening.
Yeah, it doesn't slow down to a crawl. You can do other things.
That's good because that's not true on the PC at times.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, that's definitely even with dual core processors. It's still.
I don't know that encoding MP3s is any faster, but I don't know that it's any slower either. So I mean, it's probably comparable.
I mean, it's based on a Unix underpinning Unix operating system too.
So that's exactly.
Yeah.
And that's actually one thing too that I think that I don't think we covered last week when we talked about Leopard. If you go into the terminal, so people who are used to Unix, that does actually read a little bit better now. Like, it will read things automatically where it wouldn't do that before. People who are used to, you know, doing things in command line, and you know, sometimes that's me too. Like, if I need to move a bunch of files somewhere, you know, I'll just go to the command line because I'm used to doing that. But that's something if you have Unix experience or Linux experience, then you know that will be something that will be familiar to you if you go to the Mac.
Good.
It's a BSD style operating system.
Yep.
Just for those who are into those things.
Yeah, good. All right, guys, we're just about out of time, but I want to really thank you again for participating, and I hope that Santa brings you everything that you desire. And
sorry, we got rid of your holiday segment there.
All right. You know, that's fine. That's sort of good. We sort of figured it was going to go longer than the hour, and that was fine.
It's sort of good. What?
Yeah, it's right.
I definitely think when you know we do these things in the future, we can have demos and stuff like that. But I think it is good too to have once in a while do these, you know, 2-hour shows where we just answer questions, because I
That's
think
right.
people do have a lot of questions and you know we like answering them.
Yeah,
so.
And especially as we get the word out more about these shows that we're going to be doing, you know, we'll even get more and more I have to agree with
Paul here about how, you know, it's great you guys are doing this, because it's, you know, it's nice that we're spreading the word, because like we got in contact with Tom and Renee that we heard from earlier, and you know, we were able to help them out with some things.
Absolutely.
And they seem to be quite happy with their Macs now. So.
That's great.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, we'll see you in 2008, and
we'll have a great holiday.
You too. Hold on 1 second. And we'll be back next week with just 1 hour of Main Menu, where we'll be bringing on Kelly Saperja, and that's going to be what we'll have next week. And then we'll be back in 2008 with all kinds of great Main Menu content. Good night, everybody. We'll see you in 2008.
If you would like to contact the Main Menu production team or panel of experts heard this evening on Main Menu Live, then simply send an email to mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. If you have suggestions for topics or you have questions that you would like to have addressed on a future edition of Main Menu Live, then email us and we'll do what we can to answer them or cover your suggested topics on a future Main Menu Live. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week on ACB Radio Mainstream for another Main Menu Live.